It's always interesting to have Mike Bino back with us. He's the editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine. I'm Jill Nadeau, in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. We'll talk with Mike about some holiday memories and traditions and talk about some very special people who call Wisconsin home. And Mike even has a sneak preview of next month's issue. You heard it here first, folks. Did you continue with a holiday tradition this year? Do you join in with friends or family to cook during the holidays? What do you make? Well, we'd like to hear from you. Join in the conversation. Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email at ideas@wpr.org. Hi there, Mike.
Hey, Jill. Great to be back.
And it's great to hear from you. Did you have a lovely holiday vacation?
Certainly did. Just back in the office here today for the first time in a little bit, and you know, this, when I heard that you are in charge now instead of Larry today, I mean, we can have some fun here.
We
can. It's like Dad tossing you a set of keys to a Ferrari.
Ooh, I never thought about it that way, Mike. Thank you. Let's go.
All right.
Well, actually, you know, looking through the latest issue, which is the December-January. So there's still a lot of holiday stuff in it. And lots of people are still on holiday break because it's really kind of a two-week thing. So one of the first stories that pops out, of course, is going downtown to look at holiday decorations when you're growing up. I know I used to, even though they were pretty simple. Now that I think about it, it was so exciting. Do you have memories like that, Mike?
Certainly do. And actually, we're not too far away from the holidays that people can still go down and see some of what I'm about to talk about.
Okay.
Okay, so H.C. Prangy's department store, that it has a history in this state going back to 1887 when it was founded in Sheboygan. It's so deeply rooted in the German culture there, the farming culture, that their first ads were written in German. They were selling, the saying back then was they sold everything from cradles to coffins and everything in between. But Prangy's tradition, along about 1927 in Green Bay, they set up their store and right downtown on Washington Avenue, and they had the magical holiday windows, okay? Same thing in Sheboygan. And at the flagship store, paper went over those windows in October, building the excitement in people. And after Thanksgiving was over, back then Christmas didn't run over Thanksgiving. Christmas is running over Halloween now.
It is.
But we would go down there. I recall as a child going down there and seeing, after Thanksgiving dinner, seeing the town dressed up in holiday lights, seeing the windows unveiled, and standing there watching these mechanical displays of elves in Santa's workshop. There's polar bears and penguins ice skating. There's a family of raccoons baking cookies in a kitchen with a mouse popping up. And the fascination in those mechanical, you know, by today's standards, rudimentary type,
yes,
displays, just held our interest. And we could have stood out there all night, but we walked in the blowing air doors that would, I think, blow a coat right off of you. Inside, not very energy efficient.
No, no.
And go in and go shopping for gifts for mom and dad. Now, what's special about this is every year, the Neville Public Museum in Brown County, Green Bay, brings out the original, many of the original displays, the mechanical things I'm talking about, and recreates it all in something called Holiday Memories Season's Greetings. They've done it more than 15 years, I believe. And that's the one in Sheboygan County. And Neville, it's Holiday Memories of Downtown Green Bay. That's still on display until January 12th. And some 10,000 visitors go through and enjoy it every year because it's all the original displays, boxes, signage from the old employees. People dress up in the old Prangy smocks and help kids buy some really good smelling perfume for mom.
Always top notch.
there we are. But that's some fun people can still enjoy yet.
Oh, for sure. That's a really good idea of what to do this weekend. We do have a couple of listeners that have called in because they have memories of downtown Christmas. Our first one is Jeff, and he's in Superior. Hi, Jeff. What's your memories?
Hello. Yes, Happy New Year. We used to have a Prangies in Superior at the mall that opened in the 80s, I think. And one of the reasons it didn't succeed, I think, was they didn't tell their story. And there's such a hunger in northern Wisconsin for the connection to downstate. And, you know, we have a Culver's and Quick Trip this year. But businesses are really helpful at building that connection. And when I was growing up, I used to deliver papers, the Superior Evening Telegram, now owned by Knight Ritter, which is also the Duluth paper. But I used to take my paper boy money, and I'd take the DTA downtown Superior, and I'd shop at Kresge's and Newberry's and Woolworth's, where there was a soda fountain counter. And I literally would spend my, you know, as I was a teenager, spend my wages on Christmas presents for my family and come home with packages and walk a mile from the bus stop to my house and wrap them all myself. And it was such a wonderful Christmas downtown Superior experience. And nowadays we have the Android Hotel, which goes back to 1925, and John F. Kennedy stayed there when he gave a speech during his campaign in the 60s. So we have a lot of history in downtown Superior, but we're looking forward to the future with new small businesses.
All right. Well, great. Thanks for sharing that, Jeff. It sounds like a pretty magical time. Let's go now to Russ, and he's in Stoughton. Hi, Russ.
Hi, good morning. I have memories of, I grew up in Brookfield, Illinois, home of the zoo, as they like to be called. my parents and my aunts and uncles used to take us when we were younger on later on Thanksgiving evening, and we would go down to State Street in Chicago and see the decorated windows. There was Montgomery Ward's and, of course, Marshall Field, the fair stores, Kresge's, Woolworth's, and all of those. And the light-up night was Thanksgiving evening at some point, probably 6 o'clock. So we'd get down there, look at all the windows. Well, later on, when I got older and had a driver's license, somewhere, I don't know, 63 or 64, I took my girlfriend down there after Thanksgiving dinner, and the crowds were thinning around 9 o'clock or 9:30. And we ended up getting mugged.
Oh, no.
And we never sat there again. But those were memories. The windows were absolutely beautiful. And like your previous caller was saying, they were articulated and with Lionel trains and all of that. And it was a wonderful experience.
Well, thank you, Russ. I'm glad the good outweighed the bad on that one. Right, Mike?
Yeah, well, what's interesting, Russ, is you're probably looking at the same displays that I just described as being shown in Green Bay, because Prangies went to, a lot of these displays were made by the Silvestri Art Company of Chicago for the larger department stores. They were on display at Marshall Field's and some of the bigger stores down there. Prangies went there in the early 60s and purchased them secondhand and brought them up from Chicago. A lot of these were in the private collection of a person named Georgia Rankin from Sturgeon Bay, who preserved them, and they were later then put under ownership of the Neville Museum and also the Sheboygan County Historical Society. So there are Chicago roots in a lot of these mechanical displays.
Ah, great. That's a cool little tidbit to know. And we've got one more. Rita emailed to share her memory. And she said, as a little girl, she would walk in downtown Fond du Lac with her dad and brother and remember seeing the Chipmunks character singing in the store window. She said it was a special night with her dad because her mom was busy with her homemakers group. So she had company, but she was able to have that with her dad. So
Very nice.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that with Rita. Now, there's an artist in Fond du Lac who took her memories of Christmas decorations and turned them into art. Tell us what she's making.
I'm glad you mentioned Fond du Lac because a lot of what we're going to talk about here is really symbolic of that city, the south end of Lake Winnebago. There's There's a native there, Marianne Ponke, from Fond du Lac, and she's to her, it just wouldn't be Christmas without seeing Rudolph 40 feet up in the air. Okay. And what anybody from Fond du Lac knows what I'm talking about. There at Lakeside Park, right alongside the lake, there's a 40-foot lighthouse dating to 1933, and it's symbolic of the town. And on top of that lighthouse, they perched Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and he's overseeing everything. And there was a light-up display. There still is a light-up display all through the park, and folks would get in their cars. Marianne remembers hopping in Dad's 1952 Chevy sedan with her siblings, and they're fighting over the window seats. And they'd be toured through the park slowly to take in some of that magic. This has made such an impression on Marianne that she's an artist, and she has taken to working in the medium of paints on round ornaments, globes. Not the easiest thing to paint on.
No.
Glass, and she's got, I just mentioned the image of the lighthouse. She's got the lighthouse memorialized on one, and other parts of this park, used in all seasons, people have memories of what's there, and they're memorialized on these ornaments. And what's more, they're not only hers, but when she has her own collection, but when friends and family and others see these things, they started asking her to make more for them. It's a little hobby in retirement, but it's, again, in the theme of your show today, Jill, treasured memories. These, these aren't coming from her mind so much as from her heart, and that's true of a lot of artists, but it's so deeply tied to Fond du Lac in Wisconsin. We thought we had to get these in.
Definitely, and they are beautifully done. She's a former art teacher, so she certainly has the background. And the detail is amazing in the photos that you had in the article.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. We're talking about interesting people, places, and traditions in Wisconsin. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. After 11:45, we'll talk to the author of a new graphic novel on the history of the women's fight for their rights. Hope you can stay with us on the Ideas Network. But right now, let's get back to talking with Mike Bino about some of the stories in our Wisconsin magazine. Now, Mike, I know a lot of people who like to get together to cook, especially cookies at the holiday season. But the last issue of the magazine has a story about ravioli. Tell us about that.
Well, and this is part of the reason, Jill, I love doing this job, because you run into unusual stories from the people of Wisconsin, people doing unusual things. And Christmas cookies surely are a beloved tradition everywhere. But there is an Italian tradition of making Christmas ravioli. And a reader from Brookfield, Wisconsin, we just heard from Brookfield, Illinois, Ellie Touches gets together with her family to do this every year. She works with elderly folks. She's as a volunteer. She works in an office. She sings in a choir. But crimping ravioli is the job she loves best. And what's so special about it is, yeah, it's good food, but this is a tradition that has been held in this family for 100 years. It began with their grandmother, 1894, great-grandma Maria emigrated from northern Italy to America in 1912. She was born in 1894, came here in 1912, brought recipes with her. And this faded recipe the family uses every year was in her own hand, and Jerry gets together with seven or eight people, and it rotates at different homes around the Milwaukee area, three different families together, and they put together a meat mixture which rests for a day. Then they come back and set up several stations, and there's a child named Abby, who's age 9. She's the dough roller. There's Olivia, 5. She's putting water around the edges of the dough discs so that they will be sticky enough and hold as the mixture is spooned in. They're making sauce. They make about 150 of these and freeze them, and they come out to be boiled on Christmas morning. Now, Ellie was kind enough to share her great-grandma Maria's ravioli recipe, and you can make that any time of year. It doesn't have to be Christmas or New Year's.
Mm-hmm.
And it's we've shared that on the Facebook page of Our Wisconsin. For those of you who are on Facebook, familiar with it, just hop to Our Wisconsin magazine, and you'll see that recipe shared there today.
And for those who aren't on Facebook, Mike, could we share that on our program note, too?
You certainly can.
Okay. Well, I'll update that after the show then, so you can go there at WPR.org/Larry, and you'll be able to find that. But it's always nice with Facebook, and they should be friends with you on Facebook anyway, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, you know, let's kind of get off the topic a little bit about the holidays, because, you know, time is passing. I thought that the article on Orrin Benson was so good. What an amazing life this man had.
What a colorful character.
Yeah.
Anybody who recalls the Milwaukee Sentinel sports show, they sponsored it for many years, and it was quite a big event. Anybody will remember Orrin Benson, who lived in Eagle, Wisconsin, Waukesha County, will remember his shows alongside the water tank there. He had swimming retriever dogs, but he also had trained bears, he had cubs, you name it, and he had it. He was a farm boy from Minneapolis, and it was Minnesota, I should say, moved to the area, and it was said that there was not an animal he couldn't train. He trained ferrets, again, I mentioned bear cubs, and he became famous not only around Milwaukee, but the sports show traveled. And so they would go coast to coast every year, hitting the larger cities. And like a lot of flamboyant, colorful characters, he was a shameless self-promoter and a shameless name-dropper. He knew Roy Rogers. He knew Joan Crawford. He knew Prince Philip. And Roy parked his camper in his driveway in Eagle. And he was just filled with entertaining, colorful stories about the time he brought a descented skunk and turned it loose in Sasso's Bar in Eagle. Nobody knew it was descented but him. So I guess that opened up a place for him to sit down pretty quickly. He had an Airedale trained to go fishing and pull fish out of the water. He knew Sally Rand, the fan dancer, the queen of burlesque in the 30s, and on and on. And I like New York City. There's a quote in here. A newspaper reporter in New York City said, Orrin's dogs were capable of bringing back everything but a bald man's hair.
Yes.
So, but I'd like to invite anybody who's got a computer to look at an enchanting video from a student at UW-Milwaukee that chronicles his life. If you Google Orrin Benson film, Eagle Historical Society, you'll get to this video. It's about 20-25 minutes, and it talks about him training timber wolves and lots of fun stories. So again, Orrin Benson film, Eagle Historical Society.
Yes, definitely. And I'll try to see if I can get a link on that for our program note, too. But it should be easy enough for to come up. Another interesting life story that you had in that issue is of musician Pee Wee King. Why don't you tell us about him and what is his connection with Wisconsin?
Well, this is one of the stories I love the most, because how does a kid named Frankie Kuczynski, Polish kid with an accordion from South Milwaukee, how does he become the leader of the number one, the most popular country western swing band in the nation in the 1950s? I mean, beating out Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys and the giants in country music. Frankie Kuczynski Kuczynski with his accordion. Okay, well, he took the name Pee Wee King for obvious reasons. Nobody can mispronounce it or misspell it.
Yes.
And he's most famous for co-writing the most popular country song of all time, and that's the Tennessee Waltz. To get an idea of how big that really is, everybody's heard the song. Patti Page's rendition of it in 1951 was the best-selling record in America by a 2-to-1 margin. It has been recorded by more than 500 artists since then, and in 1965 was declared the state song of Tennessee. So there's been some impact there. He was born in South Milwaukee into a Polish-speaking family. And over time, his parents had grown up on farms near Abrams in Oconto County, and that town has now claimed him as their native son, and he was very proud of that. He wrote later in his autobiography. But Pee Wee King, besides that that song that we're talking about, is really a towering giant in country music because he introduced non-traditional instruments. This is back in the early days of the Grand Ole Opry. That was a very conservative and staid organization. Didn't take to change all that quickly. He introduced accordion, drums, horns, electric guitar, a lot of non-traditional instruments, and that caused country music to cross over and dent the pop charts. This is the first time this was happening. Now, people today, it's common.
Right.
Glenn Campbell, Kenny Rogers, Carrie Underwood, Taylor Swift, they're all standing on Pee Wee King's shoulders. And his music drew from, it wasn't just country, it drew from waltzes, polkas, cowboy ballads. There's a little bit of big band jazz mixed in there. It's American music. And he finally hit the big time. He was playing around the Wisconsin area. Gene Autry's band had an unfortunate traffic accident. They needed some musicians to fill in. He was one of them, and that really gave him the in to get to Nashville and become and take off from there. So, again, it's another example of some of the interesting stories you find in and around Wisconsin. The Tennessee Waltz, everybody's heard that. Nobody, I didn't realize some Polish kid from South Milwaukee came up with it, and I think that's just one more facet of what makes Wisconsin such a wonderful place.
Right, I had no idea either, and it actually was one of my father's favorite songs because he heard it when he was on his way to basic training, you know, going, you know, 1951, and so it was always a special one in our house, but I had no clue that it was from Wisconsin, basically. So,
and we, you know, music has such power. We got a letter came in just after that from a woman and man at Wishwaters named Mary Beth Kolarczyk, and she just wrote, "That story brought tears to my eyes because I recall my mother didn't like to dance, but my dad did. And I recall my father dancing with me when I was 9 years old to that song."
Aw. Yeah, it's amazing what memories bring back from, well, like we were talking about traditions and those windows, you know, all those memories. It's amazing. Let's go to now to Turner Hall in Milwaukee. Now, it's a landmark for anyone who's been down there. They kind of know it, but probably don't know the history behind the building. And there's a lot of other ones like it in Wisconsin, too.
Historic Turner Hall. Anybody who's been in or around Milwaukee probably has had a fish fry there. Right downtown, and it's a castle of a building, really, built in 1882 out of Cream City brick, which is really, that's Milwaukee.
Yes.
The building's
iconic.
<built there.
laughs>
Right, and it's more than a ballroom because there's a gym in the basement, and Turner Hall is emblematic of a large movement from the 1840s, which involved gymnastics. Okay, so the Turners are rooted in German tradition. actually they date to before Germany existed as a nation. And the Turner's motto is a sound mind and a sound body. And it dates to 1811 in Europe when Friedrich Ludwig Jahn started a movement based on physical fitness, and that's where the gymnastics came from. Now, at the time, it was more than a social club or a cultural club or athletic club. It was a cover for military-style training that he was hoping would someday become useful in building a unified Germany. And there was, in 1848, a revolution that failed, and that sent 600,000 Germans, many of them Turners, here to the United States. They were called 48ers. Okay, they brought with them a deep love of freedom and democracy and that athleticism. A lot of them were Turners. Many of them came to Wisconsin, our German heritage, our German culture. And many of them were Catholic, but it's not all about fish fries and beer. Okay, so the Wisconsin Turners, they fought in the Union Army, and they shut down some of these Turner halls. There were there were dozens of them spread out across the state. They were the center of town. They were the center of culture alongside the churches. There's only three of them existing, operating yet today as Turner clubs. That's Madison, Milwaukee, and Sheboygan. 120 years ago, there were dozens. They were in New Holstein, Oconto, Two Rivers, Wausau, Medford, Kenosha, Monroe. Interestingly, in Monroe, the Turners have disbanded, but their Turner Hall is still there. And what's really cool about this one, it's the only Turner Hall of Swiss origin, and people still use it as a gathering place. One more thing, Olympians came from the Turners, representing the United States. Fred Roethlisberger, who trained in Milwaukee, he represented the U.S. in the 68 Summer Olympics in Mexico City. Later on, he went out, he coached Minnesota's gymnastics program. They won 11 Big Ten championships. Gymnastics is still taught at the Milwaukee Turner Hall, but at a much lower level. They're more kids' activities these days rather than Olympic-style stuff. Monroe's Turner Hall, Marie Hosley in 1952, she represented the U.S. at the Helsinki Olympics. So these Turner Halls, whether they're German or the Swiss-style one in Monroe, really had an impact on the state of Wisconsin from the 1840s forward. And a piece of interesting history, and once in a while we like to bring out these historic stories here. The magazine is mostly current day, mm-hmm. but again, some of this history, a lot of people don't know it, and it's fun to bring that forward.
Yeah, it definitely is. If you have a question or comment about some of the things we've been talking about, please give us a call. Lines are open, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And I know I live in Watertown, and there's a Turner Hall there that isn't as a club anymore, but definitely big events, weddings, it's constantly busy, fish fries, of course. So I'm sure a lot of communities have those yet.
Certainly.
Yeah. Now, you're busy right now working on the next issue of Our Wisconsin. It's coming out the end of the month, I'm assuming. Why don't you talk a little bit about what your job is like as the editor, Mike?
Well, it's, as I may have said before, I think it's the best job in the world. Because
no, I have the best job in the world.
Well, okay, that's right. We'll let Larry know that. Give her a raise, Larry. There, you know, you're plugging me here. I got to help you out.
Sounds good. Sounds
okay.
good.
Okay. yes, the stories, the cover of the magazine says Wisconsin, but it's really about the people of Wisconsin. And the stories that come forward from readers, we put as many reader stories into the issue as we can. We ask them to help us write the magazine, and they do. They jump in and give us a hand. One story, you just mentioned Watertown. Now, we have a story coming up about one of the favorite sons of Watertown.
I knew who you're going to talk about. Go ahead.
He wasn't very tall in stature,
no.
But he was exceedingly famous, and that's Meinhard Robbie, mm-hmm. who was a munchkin, one of the only munchkins in The Wizard of Oz with a speaking role. And he was not very tall in stature, but he stood tall in very many ways because these weren't enlightened times in the early 1900s when he was growing up. The 1939 was when The Wizard of Oz was happening, but he was in his 20s then. He stood 4'7" at his tallest. There was some discrimination at the time of little people, I guess we call them now. He had an accounting degree, but was told he belonged in a carnival. These were not enlightened times.
Right.
He didn't care. He went to work for Oscar Mayer. He was with the Wienermobile, the world's smallest chef.
Little Oscar, I'm sure some people remember him. Little Oscar, yeah.
He did what he could, but he also became a pilot and a trainer of pilots in World War II. He volunteered and went in and was flying in the Civil Air Patrol. He made enough money over time to donate $3 million to charities that help people. Just a towering giant of a man. And this is another story that a lot of people maybe outside Watertown don't know. The Munchkin coroner who declared the Wicked Witch of the East dead was from Watertown off the dairy farm.
Yeah, and actually, I think he was a little outside of Watertown, but it was fairly close. So Johnson
and a very
Creek,
close,
yeah.
mm-hmm. very close friend of Judy Garland.
Yes, well, that's interesting. And we have someone on the line who I believe knew him, Bruce in Barnes. Hi, Bruce.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Well, what did you know, Reinhardt?
No, I knew Orrin Benson.
Oh, Orrin. I'm sorry. Okay. All right. So we'll pop back to Orrin. So tell us about Orrin. He was our wildlife trainer or dog trainer.
Yes, he was.
Mm-hmm. So just quickly, what...
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I said just quickly, because we're kind of running out of time here, but what are your memories of him?
Well, my father, Dr. P.P. Swart, was his veterinarian, and I got to meet Orrin a number of times and actually played with his wolf. Well, I was only about 10 years old at that time.
Right.
And when I was 17, my dad's dog got laid up for the hunting season, and Orrin loaned us a dog for the season to use for pheasant and duck hunting. So, yeah, I've known him. He's a good man.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for sharing that with us, Bruce. And then we also have Paul in Madison who has a little information for us about the Turners. Hi, Paul. Did we not get it right?
No, that's correct. I'm a historian, a sometimes contributor to the magazine. I'm a historian of German-American social movements in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And the Turners were actually militantly secular as opposed to semi-religious. And Catholics generally stayed far away from the Turners. And they played a crucial role in giving birth to the socialist movement in Milwaukee, which elected so many city officials and brought so many benefits to the city. So that's the story of the Turners. There's a wonderful mural in Turner Hall of opposition to World War I. It's a mural on the second floor of the Turner Hall in Milwaukee. Everybody who visits that neighborhood should go and see it.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Paul. I appreciate that. And Mike, I do believe that you do mention the political leanings of the club in Milwaukee in the article, don't you?
Yes. There were three socialist mayors in Milwaukee, and all of them were Turners. Hohn is one of the more well-known ones.
Mm-hmm.
This was known as sewer socialism because they were greatly focused on public works, doing as much good as they could for as many people as possible. So, yes, we talk about the political aspects of this in that story.
Okay. Well, thank you, Paul. Appreciate that. And then your issue coming out at the end of the month, you're going to be talking about, well, it's still going to be winter. So you've got some winter articles too, don't you?
We do. Mm-hmm. We found a DNR warden who does his patrols 8 miles a day skating to
wow.
check ice fishermen. He also got in a pickup hockey game with some Amish youths who could not believe the game warden would play hockey with them. We have a profile on Ernie St. Germain, who is royalty in Hayward.
Okay.
He is the last participating original starter in the Berkey Binder. He's skied in every one held since 1973. And he's got some memories of that first one, which took a little bit of a toll on him when he was 25 and thought he was in good shape and never stood on Nordic skis before. We've got the legend of Paul Bunyan that's got roots here in the state. Could
oh, yeah.
Paul Bunyan have been founded in Wisconsin? Somebody's making a case. A lot of fun stuff for wintertime.
Yeah. Well, Michigan and Minnesota are going to probably be disputing that, so it should be interesting to watch.
We're ready.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Mike. We always appreciate hearing from you and finding out all these tidbits about Wisconsin. It's always good to hear.
Well, thank you so much. It's always fun to be on here, and thanks for sharing your listeners with us here. It's always fun to speak with them.
Great, and Happy New Year to you, Mike.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Okay. Well, we've been talking with Mike Bino. He's the editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine. Find out more at ourwisconsinmag.com, and also you can search for their Facebook page. They always like to share their beautiful photographs there, so it's always a good one to have in your feed. Stay with us on the Ideas Network, because coming up next, the fight for women's rights in a graphic novel.